Welcome everyone, little Lenny Kravitz bringing us into the FT After Hours podcast. Good morning, Andre Russo in the house today.
Hey.
What's going on, buddy?
Good morning.
Yeah.
Hey, it's a Canadian long weekend, so happy Victoria Day for all of my fellow Canadians listening to the show today.
Yeah, we thought we'd change it up a little bit and kind of one of my favorite songs, and if any of you guys listen to the podcast, we played that song before for somebody, and in honor of maybe a possible another crash, I'm playing it again, even though there isn't too many people in the studio. I'm actually in here all by myself today, Andre.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy schedule. Wayne had some stuff going on, and Mike and I have been battling baseball, so it's been really tough to get in here and get the guys together. But, you know, it is what it is. Your son's not any sports or anything, is he, Andre?
No. James doesn't gravitate towards those kind of things, which I suppose is good for my schedule.
Yeah. Any of you parents out there listening, if your kids are in baseball or sports, or especially like us, we're in travel baseball, like at this time, your life is pretty much zero. I mean, it's nonstop. So I'm actually been kind of out of the loop here a little bit. I haven't been, on the message boards. I haven't been on any websites. Hear little bits and pieces, from Wayne. He sends me some links and stuff. But, man, I'm telling you, I've really been out of the loop the last couple weeks. So it's kind of a bummer. I don't have everyone in here today, Andre. We did get some flying in last weekend, and it was some good flying. We're pretty much ready for the Night Vision Air review. We're almost really ready for the E-Flight Whippet review. We got
Excellent.
Some good stories, and we have a phenomenal crash story of our own. But again, it's just a bummer we couldn't get everybody together and get in here and talk about that. But hopefully next week or so, we'll get everybody together and talk about it. I think you guys are going to really enjoy it. So, in the meantime, it's me and you. This is probably going to be kind of a short and sweet episode. Just talk about a few things. I think we'll run through some crash stories here this morning. It is Saturday morning. I got my Flora coffee here and trying to wake up. And we'll get this recorded and out to you today, hopefully, so you have something to listen to over the weekend. So what's going on with you, Andre? Like I said, I'm out of the loop. Fill me in. What's going on?
Yeah, I had a busy week as well. I didn't get out this week until Thursday to fly, and I maintain that flying is such an awesome stress release. You know, I'd had a busy production schedule doing some big video projects. So, Thursday night, I managed to get out with the Sukhoi, and I came home, and it was completely just night and day difference, right? But this week's been pretty busy. I've been watching on social media the coverage of Joel Knoll, and really enjoying some of the stuff we've seen between little tweets we saw from Flight Test, and then Horizon's been good, and of course Hobby King, and just really enjoying the content they put out. There's some beautiful planes up there. Or down there, in my case.
Hey, real quick, before you get into that, you touched on something that was rather interesting. You were just saying how, you're stressing at work, or you're having a bad week or whatever, and you grab a couple airplanes, and you go out and do some flying, and it seems to calm you down and relax you and everything. So I find sometimes, for me, it depends on really kind of what kind of mood or something I'm in, but sometimes I find that the opposite for me. Like, if I was having a really bad day or an off day or whatever, sometimes I will not go out and fly, just for the fact that I know if I'm kind of stressing out or I crash, it's going down the tubes bad. Now, once in a while, I might go out and take just the radiant out or something, in a chair, and just sit down in the chair, throw the radiant up, and that will kind of relax me a little bit. But sometimes that doesn't work for me.
Same way. I knew or I learned quickly when I was working on any of the classic or the race car. If I was in a bad mood and I went out and I worked on the car, usually it cost me money because I'd do something foolish and break something expensive.
Right.
Well, with the flying, the planes, I've got enough of a mix in the fleet that I know if I'm, you know, if I'm slightly off, well, I'm not going to fly something aggressive that needs me to be on my toes. I'm going to get something that's a little more lofty. But for me, I just find that, like Thursday, I was just, it had been a long cumulative week, and it was just, you know, day after day, like you just going and going and going. I finally got home and said, I need to get out and just get some fresh air. And I think I only ran like 3 or 4 packs, you know, it's, and, you know, talk to the guys at the field real quick and, you know, just an hour. I guess I'm lucky enough that I'm like 5-10 minutes away from the field.
Right.
So I just got out and yeah, it cooled me down. Maybe there are going to be days where it won't, like if, you know, if I tank the EFX. Actually, no, I know if I'm in that mood, I don't fly the EFX.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Because it's just going to end poorly for the poor EFX, right?
And sometimes even like, having a bad week or something, Wayne will go, hey, you know, let's get out and fly. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right. So, and I'll get out and I won't really fly that much, but just hanging out, talking about RC, hanging with the guys, watching other people fly or maybe shooting some pictures or videos. That is fun and sometimes more relaxing than actually, you know, me doing the flying.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, you've got to have the right plane or it's one of those things you get up and you know you're in the crosswind or something and you're kind of like, you know, I don't feel comfortable at this moment. You know, I'm leery. And we had some pretty vicious crosswinds this week. So that's like, you know, I look at the forecast, say, oh, crosswind. Well, I know the FW190, I'm not taking it out because I just don't want to deal with trying to make that thing crab across the runway or land on the slower landing spot. So,
right.
So like Thursday, I looked at what I could fit in the car. So I had the Sukhoi and I had the Sky Mule. And that thing looks so awesome coming in on with the crosswind. You're kind of, you know, crabbing sideways and, you know, just turn the rudder just a bit and then touch down. But I definitely got to work on my finesse of my landings. I'm still a little bit rough. I wouldn't want to be a passenger in one of my own planes because I don't think you'd have a spinal cord left.
Oh, that's funny. All right. Anyway, sorry to interrupt you and going off of a
No.
Yeah, continue on there with the Joe Knoll stuff because I'm interested to know what's going on down there.
Oh, well, we've seen a couple hints from Hobby King's lineup for the summer, and they know how to really pique our interest, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But kudos to Horizon for some of those photos. And sorry, even a Hobby King, they were just showing other people's planes, their creations. They're just some really, 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 really big ones. And the one that we talked about to highlight the most had to be that Corsair, the Hangar 9 Corsair pictures and video from Horizon. It's just like, that is a big, beautiful airplane.
Yeah, and this, like, you know, I haven't seen it fly, but I've seen it at the shows in person. It really is, to see it up close and see the detail and the size of it, it is a beautiful airplane.
That's when you're real serious about. I mean, yeah. I can't fit that thing in a car. What's it going to a trailer?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
85 inch wingspan. I don't know how it breaks down. I don't know if the wings fold, but it just, you know, they were spinning up the prop and just the sound of that thing. You know, I can see the allure to a gas powered motor, but I just, the logistics behind it. You know, like I throw a battery pack into my airplane. I'm 5 minutes from the field. Oh, you know, that's for me. That's where gold, this hobby has just become gold.
Yeah. Hey, and I got to give some credit to Horizon Hobby. I'm not sure if you've seen what they were doing with that Corsair, but they were actually, you know, had a couple radios on the wireless buddy box, and they were letting people come up and physically fly that airplane around. That, to me, is, I mean, crazy in itself, one, for a big, expensive airplane, but to let people say that maybe would never even think about purchasing something like that or have the money or whatever, but just to say, hey, man, I flew this big 85-inch gas-powered Warbird, you know?
And there is no safe technology on that thing.
No, not at all.
I don't think I could, you know, for that kind of money... It's a car.
Yeah, I agree. I if I had unlimited budget, would I get one? Absolutely. I'm still, in my heart of hearts, I still have a soft spot for gas engines, especially from way back when I was doing the RC, the fifth scale RC cars. You know, I had the big engines in them. And so I still have that soft spot that someday maybe I'm probably never going to go to that scale of size, but now, you know, with the smaller gas engines becoming more popular and they're getting smaller and smaller, where I can maybe build a nice little Warbird with a 15cc gas engine, you still have that, you know, engine and that sound and everything, but, you know, I can still fit it in my car, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, for me, the gas, the club around here is, I'd say, 20-odd minutes away, so that's not too bad, but yeah. Still, you know, 5 minutes versus 20.
I agree. I'm right there with you. The electric, you know, is still so convenient, you know, throw it in your car, throw the battery in it, you know, no noise, no sound. And, you know, that's kind of a crazy thing, too. A lot of times when we're flying out on the field, you know, we fly on behind Jackson School, and it's on the edge of a park, so we get a lot of people that come by and check things out and want to know more about it. And normally the first thing they say is, man, that thing is really quiet, you know, and yeah. What is it? So you show them and it's electric powered, and that blows them away, for one, how fast and agile they are for being electric, and two, that they're, 95% of everything we fly is foam. They're like, that's foam? It looks that good and it's foam? Like, yeah, and if you crash it, you glue it back together. So it is crazy how far the hobbies come in that aspect.
Yeah, and it's for us, we fly by a high school, and they're having a Olympics game. And they contacted us and said, would you guys like to come out and do a one-hour demo?
No, really?
So, yeah. So next week, or not next week, the weekend after, or not the week after, I actually got the morning booked off work, and a whole group of us are going to go out, and we're going to fly a demo for about an hour at the field. Well, we fly out of a football field, right? So they're going to back everybody off the field and give us our safety buffer, and we're going to do some aerial demonstrations for these people.
No way.
So I sent a real quick email to Jen Bixler and said, hey, can you send me some stickers? And she went above and beyond. And so I've got some flight test swag to give out for the event. So,
no kidding. Which is,
yeah. So thank you, Jen. You're awesome.
Fantastic. She is just awesome when it comes to stuff like that.
But that's for us, that was like a, hey, you know, it's a nice thing for the school to acknowledge that we're there. And we, you know, we do things like we make sure we pick up if there's any, you know, fod or anything, especially props. We go around and sweep the area, because we don't want to leave a presence. And that's the important thing about flying.
Right.
That's the beautiful thing about RC, what we do. I mean, if anything goes down, most time you have a little couple chunks of foam. But most time we make sure we sweep for props, and, you know,
right.
We all do it, and we forget about them sometimes.
Sure.
But, we don't want to leave a presence. But it's just really awesome that the school contact us and say, hey, you know, you guys want to come out and show off some. So I'm gonna probably fly all my scratch foam builds.
Uh-huh.
I might bring one or two of the purchase planes, but if I can highlight the flight test stuff, you know, get my FT racer in the air and throw that around, it'll be awesome.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask you what you were going to fly, but yeah, that's a great idea. That's fantastic that, you know, they were, it's kind of the same thing a little bit going on with us, for our baseball team. It's kind of funny, our team is called Take Flight. I don't know how that came about or whatever, and Flight Test was generous enough to help sponsor us a little bit, so.
Oh, wonderful.
The town actually knows Flight, you know, has heard of Flight Test and everything, and they were just so excited. You know, we were talking about doing some demos for kids and stuff down there after the games and everything, and they were just above and beyond excited that, you know, we were going to do some RC stuff down there. So I was excited about that. All right. The other thing, too. I got to see a couple videos of the Horizon guys with the Whippet. Did you see any of that, Andre?
Actually, my buddy Instagrams us, he sent me some videos as well. So I've been watching that plane very closely.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'll wait till I'll wait till Flight Fest and test out what you guys have.
Sure.
Just to get a feel to see if it's something I'm interested in.
Sure.
But even Scott was doing the wingtip launches, so the whole spin and go.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Are you guys chucking it, or have you tried to do the, you know, without the knob, just grabbing the wing and do the actual discus launch style?
You mean with the Whippet, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's so light, and here's the problem I'm finding with Whippet. Not really that it's a problem, but it's so small and it's so light that it took me and Wayne a little while to figure out how to throw this thing. Like, if you obviously you grab it by the wingtip because there's no peg or anything, because I think if you tried to put a peg or something in there, it would just rip out of the wing.
Yeah, just rip it.
Obviously, you're not going to do a normal DLG throw. All you do is you just kind of pull your arm back and just give it a good chuck in the air. Now, the problem is, it seemed like the harder you tried to throw it, the worse it got.
Worse
so
it
it's
got.
Just
yeah.
got to be a nice, smooth, gentle toss in the air. Seemed to work best for us every time. So that's what we've been doing, and it's working out pretty good that way.
Scott said he'll need a shoulder reconstruction after he's through, because it's exactly like you and Wayne said, you know, just one more, and that's the challenge.
Yeah,
just,
and
how
and,
long is it going to stay afloat?
Right, and that was an actual problem we found out too. He's exactly right. The first initial throws, we were trying to throw it kind of hard, and with nothing there, and there's no inertia or anything, it was hard on. I mean, it kind of hurt your shoulder a little bit. You know, we're regular DLG. You know, you get the spin going in the inertia of that plane to throw it. This thing is nothing. I mean, think about it, Andre. If you just took your ultra micro radiant out and just tried chucking it in the air as hard as you could, basically the same thing. So it is a little learning process of how to fly that thing. So I watched a couple videos of the guys down there at Jonal, and it was really cool. They, you know, were doing look like the all up, last one down, and you know they were passing the transmitter around to people down there, letting them try it out and fly it, and it was pretty cool. And it is a fun little airplane. I can't wait to get it out a little bit more now that it's really starting to warm up around here. Get out on the late evenings, and we haven't caught any big thermals with it. Just a few little bumps here and there, but it is a lot of fun so far. So we'll see.
It'll be interesting, because I'm actually, while we're sitting here, I'm just looking at my poor little UMX Radiant, which is pretty well hung on the wall since last fall, and I feel bad, but it's like, I'm enjoying the big Radiant, and you know, I haven't really flown a lot of the UMX planes lately, because it's just one of those things where it depends on the feel, but it's going to be interesting to see how this one fits in with the fleet, and if it becomes an instant favor, or if it's just one of those things where it's a, I don't want to use the word fad, but maybe it is, you know, it's like, yeah, that was neat. And then you just move back to the bigger ones. Cause like you said, it's just, you know,
it's a possibility. It seems to me it's going to be one of those things. I don't really think I could crank it around my house anyway, just because of the tree factor, but I think it's going to be one of those things. A lot of times we fly in the evenings anyway, whether it be after work or just even seems to be on the weekends, we fly in the evenings, where it kind of stays in the car. You go out and you fly your regular stuff, and then, you know, even if we're out taking out the Mystique or the Radiance or whatever, we're flying late afternoon looking for thermals, and it gets to be, you know, 6-7 o'clock where things really calm down. You're still getting the heat off the ground thermals and everything, where you can just pull it out of your car, you know, chuck it around and fly it. For us personally, I don't really think it's going to be a fad, because we really enjoy the DLGs. And,
that's true.
You know, like with my Elf and everything, and Wayne's Predator. So I think it kind of has a little niche, though. You know, it definitely has to be pretty calm, you know, later evening, early morning, or just, you know, calm air. So we'll see. So far, we do really like it. And hopefully next podcast or the one over, or the one after, we'll get a full review on it and get some opinions out there.
I think, yeah, you know what I'm almost thinking? It's like you need a simple 4-channel spectrum radio that you just leave in the car that's bound to the thing, right? So you're not bringing out your, you know, you're not leaving your big, you know, DX9 or whatever in the car, you know, and like Wayne said, they're just sitting there ready to go at any time.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I didn't really think too much of that, where I have just a DX6i that's been sitting on the shelf, probably has an inch of dust on it. You can just bind it to that and leave it in the car, you know?
Yeah. Like, I've got my little micro Tiger Moth there, and the remote can charge the battery as well, but, you know, you just have a whack of those sitting in the car. Even get the little cigarette USB charger thing as well, just in case.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, we're onto something here.
Yeah, exactly. So, for me, that's about the only videos I got to really catch up on. But what else? I know you were talking about Hobby King's got some newer stuff out.
They showed off about 3 or 4 new planes. So they have a new Cub. Mm-hmm. Looks very much, I don't know what the name of it is yet, it reminded me of the Fun Cub, bot, and I was all like, oh, come on, guys, don't clone the Funcom. And they showed a video, I don't know if it was update 1 or 2, and the thing has a drop bomb bay in the belly, and I'm like, oh, all's forgiven, because that is awesome looking, you know. It has skis, so I'm like, and
floats too, I believe, right?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry, floats.
Oh, okay.
And it had a really nice pink scheme. Actually, I've been flying my Fun Cup too, because we've had a lot of wind, and the guys are razzing me because it's bare. There's no stickers. There's no paint on it. And they're like, you got to paint that thing up. I'm like, well, but it's in winter camo mode. But yeah, it looked neat. I may have to just grab a pair of those floats from Hobby King if I ever have a chance. But yeah, a bomb bay in the belly of your cub, that is just, you know, off. That is just crazy fun. You know, the possibilities from that. They had a little wing that they were doing some FPV flying with. I don't know what the name of that was, but that looked pretty cool. They have a 3D plane called the Bravado. Stuart was saying all this stuff is probably June, July, 6 to 8 weeks out. And then of course they started posting photos of my weakness, the P-40N. And no matter what, I did get a Warbird for the summer, and I see that plane, and they just had one with a Russian decal, so it's just all of drab green with some Russian logos on it, and I sent you the thing.
Yeah.
I still want that airplane. I don't know what the deal is with that, you know.
And yeah, I agree.
Yeah, one of the guys at the field this week brought out. I didn't know he had it, but he's a Durafly Spitfire.
Okay.
And he did the motor upgrade, the 5-blade motor upgrade.
Yeah.
Borrowed a 4S 2200, and he was flying that around. And I full on admit it. I'm a sucker for anything that looks good.
I know. Yeah.
I was like, wow. My problem with that plane. It's got really, really tiny wheels,
yes.
And I'm having enough issues landing my new FW190.
Right, right.
I'm 0 for 5, and the last landing was almost perfect, and then I nosed it over. So I'm still learning the whole tail dragger Warbird thing. But that P40. And again, Stuart flat out admitted in the videos. He says lesson learned. We previewed this thing a year ago, and we made an error. We shouldn't have gone so soon. A lot of the chatter I read about that is they're actually trying a whole new paint system, so it's a water paint. So I think they're trying to meet some U.S., Canadian, North American paint standards, so less, the lead stuff. There's a bunch of speculation, and it all makes sense. This sounds like a production issue, but it's supposed to come with a bunch of decal kits and everything, so, everybody talking about it says, we're waiting, and I fully suspect that I will have another Warbird in my fleet, even though I've said, I'm good to go and I'm done this year.
it's kind of funny. I just laugh because I've been exactly where you are now. Like, I was in that Warbird phase for a couple years. So every Warbird that was coming around or whatever, I was checking out and looking at it. And it's just funny to see you go through the process. It's kind of funny, too, because Horizon, they went through the same thing. They had a really, man, I can't even remember what the name of their plane was off the top of my head. But they had a Warbird out a couple years ago that I really had my eye on. And the same thing, they teased it. And I think it was over a year later. I don't know for sure, but I heard rumors or something was going on. Same thing. They had them all out. They were ready to ship. And something was wrong with the paint, and the paint was just peeling off. So all the shipment and everything they had, I heard, wasn't any good, and they kind of had to go back to the drawing board and redo everything. So over a year later, they still had no plane, and people were really upset, and they were canceling their orders. And so I know for sure they learned their lesson on that. As you know, they don't tease hardly anything now unless they know it's
ready to go.
Yes.
Hey, it's all about, So the lesson there for them is, won't do an early tease anymore until we're satisfied, until we know the product is ready. But I look at those photos and just go, so that's probably going to turn into my birthday's in late fall. So birthday gift or Christmas gift or something. And it's just like, I want that. But I'm still... if anybody's watching the social media, I ended up buying a used Dynam FW190. I know you were like, you're crazy.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked. I really
it looked so good, and then the offer was awesome. So I said, okay, all right. So I've got my very first Warbird with retracts, and I've already had to take the plane apart twice.
Yeah.
You know, retweak the landing gear, but, you know.
I've been through that a million times, Andre. I don't know. It seems like any of the cheap Warbirds with the retracts, they all do the same thing. Hard landing, the landing gear bends, and like you said, you take it all apart, you bend it back. I think the one I actually took the retracts and drilled them out and put in some, bigger...
piano wire?
Yeah. That seemed to solve the problem. But it's the same thing. I do have to say, the smoother the landing, like I think you got, you're kind of landing on gravel, right?
Yeah, it's a gravel track, yeah.
And even if you do have a plane with really good retracts, like if you get, after say 20, 25 lanes or something, they just start to loosen up a little bit. There's no way, to get around that. Maybe there's something out there that try to help that or fix that, but it's just a general problem with a plane with retracts like that.
Yeah, it's something for me to learn, but and it was one of those, the first flight was the fly's fantastic, and I'm just dialing in slowly, and it's I'm gonna add some color to it because it's an effective camo streak. I posted the first flight video and someone comes back going, I can't see the plane. I'm like, yeah, I know, it's blue and gray in a blue sky. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But hey, checking the box for an airplane and used, it's even better. So I mean, I'm having a good time buying used gear, and for the price of a brand new airplane, I picked up that Radian and this thing. So it's like, yeah, tick tick.
Yeah.
So
and that's the other thing I know I mentioned to you, and I have one, but the Horizon's got the new updated P-47 coming out with the new scheme and the retracts and the flaps and everything ready to go, scale propeller and everything. But one reason I was telling you that I really like that plane is, there's actually a couple reasons, but one is it has that really wide landing gear, and the thing is so easy to land. Like, you can be kind of, sideways or whatever, and that thing will just come in, land right down, straighten up. There's, very, very few nose overs. But the other thing I really like, especially if you kind of travel around a little bit and you're not really, you don't have a place to land, is that thing still comes with a, it's got that big belly on it, so that still comes with that nice hard clear plastic skid that goes on the whole bottom. So a lot of times, even when I'm out at the field, if the grass is high or whatever, I'll do some low passes, drop the gear, suck it back up, do some scale low flybys. Then when you're ready to land, you just suck the gear up, leave it up, and it comes right in and lands right on that belly skid, and it is so nice, and you don't have to worry about your landings. That is one great feature of that airplane.
Yeah, it's and that plane was on my radar, and then like I said, the 190 offer came up, so I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I admit that was a good deal. That's hard to pass up. I was a little leery of the brand, though. I wasn't really sure. I've heard some reports sometimes those don't fly the best, but it seems like that 190 is doing really good.
Yeah, and it's a different setup. Like, I mean, we're used to high KV motors with all kinds of power, and I mean, this thing is a 500 KV motor swinging a 13-inch, 3-inch, 3-bladed prop. So it's all torque.
Yeah, right, right.
Know? So it's 4S, 2200.
Oh, it is a 4S.
It is a 4S. Oh, wow. So I happen to have two batteries, and then the, talking back and forth with the seller, he's like, I've got two batteries, I'll throw them into the deal. And I was like, went and pleaded my case to my lovely wife, and she says, yeah, it sounds like a good... I come home with this thing, and it's a 50-inch wing. It's a big
plane. Oh, I didn't realize it was that big.
It's a big airplane.
Oh, okay.
50-inch, so it sits there on the, and she's like, okay, that was a pretty good deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
So it's 1,200 millimeter.
Oh, okay. All right. That was a good deal. Now, that makes sense why it's on 4, so I was like, man, why is that thing on a 4? Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Before we get off topic too far, do you know, did they give any kind of specs or anything at all of the newer Hobby King planes coming out? Now, I've seen some photos of that. I don't know what they're calling it. It's obviously like a multiplex Fun Cub knockoff, but I was really surprised at how close that thing looks to a Fun Cub with the, the design, the wheels, the landing gear, floats, the 90-degree flaps. It's very similar.
Like I said, my initial reaction was they cloned it. There was no specs on that one. Mm-hmm. What's interesting though is that, you know, I always thought they have their Bushmaster, which I thought was pretty close in setup, but I don't know what the issue is there. But like I said, it's got a drop bay, so it's like
that's kind of on the radar then.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wonder, you know, I mean, that's the thing about everybody loves about the Fun Cub is you either run it in the stock configuration or you change the motor out and, you know, you can run your bigger or smaller props. You can, you know, some people love 3D-ing it.
Right, right.
I had mine out and I was flying. Actually, when I had mine out, my buddy, we were flying. He's like, hey, let's do a slow fly bike. And he was running the Sport Cub.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, right. And that's, so it's got the AS3X on board, yep, and everything. So, you know, so we're slowing right down. And, you know, I'm like, is this slow enough? And my, you know, my Fun Cub is just like spinning there with a 12-inch prop and it just kind of sits in the wind.
Oh, yeah, that Fun Cub will eat the Sport Cub up when it comes to slow flying.
So, it's just, you know, and it's just, you know, one of those fun, crazy airplanes that everybody should own one once in their life, because it's just, you'd be amazed in the versatility in that thing. Yeah. So I don't 3D mine, but I didn't see the specs on that one. The 3D plane there, whatever, the Bravado, I think is just a 1300
3S. Uh-huh.
Very slim. They profiled with that when they called something, what are they, the new technology. They used the word, what they call it, air core. So they're starting to make hollowed out, I want to say EPO foam wings.
Yeah.
No. I thought Aircore was the name of another brand's power module.
It is. It's, what is it?
It's those little ones. Yeah, I remember the
Habaco sells them, I believe. Yeah.
Anyhow, so what Stuart said was to make the planes even lighter, they hollowed, I guess it's probably like a balloon fill, whatever. You know, it's in the manufacturing process. So the wings hollow.
Uh-huh.
So that's pretty interesting. One of the videos they had a gentleman talking about the EFX Racer, and he clipped the wings on his.
What?
Yeah, so it's got like a Reno style, and apparently it doesn't affect the performance, or it probably enhances it. And he said it cut really nice. I'm like, even the smaller wingspan.
Wow.
I have enough trouble getting mine to fly.
Yeah, no kidding. You cut them wings, the torque roll's got to be insane.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's but that's they're I won't call this plane my nemesis, but it definitely keeps me on my toes and keeps me working on it. But
What about their jet? Well, you know, got any info on the jet?
So that's the Tornado.
Uh-huh.
Are you sitting down? 6S.
Whoa. Yeah. Really? 6S?
Yeah.
So it's a good sized jet then.
Yeah, well, the guys said, I was talking to some of my buddies, they said, that's the Banana Hobby Viper.
Oh, okay.
And, but it makes sense. I mean, it's 6S is expensive, but it sounds like an entry-level EDF, because it doesn't have the retracts or anything. It's a, I want to say four-channel. Yeah, it's all foam. But it's, you know, it's your entry level. But at 6S, you know, who wants to have an entry level at 6S, right?
No,
anyhow, cool. It's it looks neat. And, of course, you know, I've been fiddling around my EDF stuff. So, again, it'll be interesting to see when they roll out all those prices and everything. I think that was all I had seen from the show, because I don't think Horizon really teed up any new – well, I think they're all teed up on their products anyhow for the summer.
Right. Interesting.
And of course, the P40 should run on 3S or 4S. I think that's depending on how you want to set the props up.
Uh-huh.
So something like a 3S 2200, probably a 3S 3000, actually, because it will probably do a 4S 2200, very much like the Spitfire setup change that they were able to put through. So.
Wow. Hey, I just caught the tail end of a video. It might have been one of Horizon's. I don't know if you've seen it. I'm not exactly sure, but if anybody is out there, search it on YouTube. I'm pretty sure Horizon put the video up. Somebody down there had a half-scale Fokker World War One airplane. Did you see the size of that thing?
Yep.
Wow.
No, I think that's the triple blade? The triple wing, sorry? There was a couple big planes.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head, but this thing, I mean, half scale. You put a kid in there and fly him around. It was insane how big that thing was.
There are some. Yeah, there it is. It's Hobby King's got it on part two of their update.
Okay.
Yeah, the green is it? Yeah. It's got the white stripes on
it. Yeah, green, like yeah. You said, kind of green color.
Yeah, there was a couple large ones. I mean, I'm sitting here. In one of the videos, they had a bomber, a full foam built up B-17 or something, and it's just like, oh my goodness.
Wow.
The logistics of just moving the stuff around are mind boggling. But I mean, if that's your passion and hobby, and you know, and they look so beautiful, I'd be terrified to fly any of these things.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Exactly. That's crazy. All right, anything else down there around Joe Knoll? If not, we'll venture on to something else.
Let's move on to something else.
All right. Hey, I know what we can talk about. This was rather interesting, and I think you've seen a little bit on Facebook, but Fred Provost called me, a flying monkey, was telling me about this full-on, like, 3D simulator using the Oculus Rift. Now, he's at one of those, what is it, a paramotor glider thing, convention or something like that, down in Florida. And he called and he says, Chris, this is unbelievable. He says, they actually put me, in the full... Now, I haven't seen the pictures or anything, so maybe, Andre, you can describe a little bit. But the way he described it, they put him in the full kind of deal with the motor glider, and then put the Oculus Rift on him. And he said, even, I think they said they had a fan or something there that worked to where when you're moving around or, you know, it actually felt like you were in the air when you were looking around and the controls worked the right way. He said it was unbelievable. Did you see some of the pictures and stuff of it?
So, well, it's basically you got blind monkey strapped into all his harness, you know, and he's got the full Oculus Rift and headphones on, and yeah, it would have been really cool to see what his video perspective was, his point of view. But yeah, it looked pretty neat. Now, you know, you're in your full, you're all suspended, so you've got a hanging monkey.
Yeah.
Fred, we love you, man.
Yeah.
And then he's got the goggles on and everything. And yeah, that has got to be fun, you know, just to do that. I can't wait to see him fly. This is, you know, it's pretty interesting to watch him go through all the strokes of learning to control the sail and everything. So it's going to be really neat. I don't know if he's going to have time he's not bringing it in July, I don't think.
Oh, bummer. I know that was his big thing. He was going to try to get it, you know, certified.
Or maybe he has been. He hasn't been showing us, you know, I haven't seen any content. He's been busy flying his quads around and crashing into deserts and, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, Fred, life is a beach. Yep.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing was he was telling me that, you know, as he was kind of taking off, he actually got that feeling in his stomach, you know, almost.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. He said it was so real. He said he was really kind of nervous because he's, you know, he is kind of afraid of heights. So he wasn't really sure how this was going to work or how he was going to take it. So as he got going and was getting in the air, he said he really got that feeling, you know, in his stomach that like, oh man, this is a little crazy here. But he said once he got up a little bit and you know, got looking around, relaxed, he said, I couldn't believe how real this felt and, you know, what I was learning and seeing and feeling. He said it was unbelievable.
I can see it being a pretty awesome training aid, but, you know, I bet the simulator rig is as much as the real rig.
I think he was saying that they're going to try to get this down and market it to where you know, you can kind of be just like how do I want to explain it? Like when we're doing flight training, a lot of times you can actually log hours in a simulator that helps you before you do the real thing. Or when we did a lot of our instrument training, a lot of it was in the simulator where, you know, you get everything dialed in and know what you're supposed to do and everything, you know, and before you get in the airplane. So I could see how, you know, you pay so much money and you get your lessons through this thing first and get the feel. And that way, you know, what I like about it is, you know, they can show you what happens if you do this, you know, or what happens if this goes wrong or whatever. So you can do a lot of emergency stuff, procedures, and go through different scenarios that way instead of, you know, the real thing. I think it's a big benefit.
The technology can just, simulators are awesome. I've used a few, just cheap ones for racing, but I always found, even with the flight sims, you sit there and go, yeah, this is neat, this is fun, get some ideas, but nothing beats the real thing. But I think this is where the Oculus Rift stuff, you're immersed in that environment. And yeah, if like the fan is gauged to the speed, so as you speed up, it would almost be interesting if the rig is tugging at you and stuff like that too.
Yeah, yeah.
Just that tactile feedback. And right. Yeah, But if it's so realistic, what's the point of actually doing it for real when you can just plug the simulator in your basement and have that experience,
Yeah, but nothing really beats, the real time, the real aspect of it, I think. Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to overcome that. But it's getting darn close, I'm telling you. So, I know another thing. I don't know if you've seen it. Wish I could remember his name. But, again, Fred sent me a link to a gentleman. I want to say his name was Scott. But I'm sure you've seen like some of these flying superheroes that some of the guys have built, like Iron Man or Superman or something, where, it actually kind of looks like a person flying around, but it's RC. This gentleman actually built a flying Bixler. Did you see this?
Flying Bixler as in Josh?
Yes.
No, I haven't, but I... Yeah.
It actually, I don't know how big it is, maybe 4 or 5 feet. It's based on them same kind of superhero type flying RC characters. But the crazy thing was it was kind of like painted up and everything like Josh, and it looks like he took a regular picture of the side of like Josh's face and had it, printed or glued or whatever on the head. It kind of creeped me out, Andre, like to see it, to see Bixler, and he had that funny like smirk on his face, and the guy was out cranking it around. I was like, that just doesn't seem right. It was crazy looking.
I need to check that out.
Yeah, I'll try to have to, if you can't find it, send you the link on there, but it was crazy looking, and the guy did a phenomenal job on it. I was kind of curious to see if Josh seen it or seen it fly out there. Man, it was just creepy just seeing that thing fly around out there.
Give it to one of his boys. Give it to Noah and do some 3D. Look, Dad, you're doing 3D.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The only other thing I wanted to mention doesn't have much to do with you up there up north, but down here the FAA is they're kind of beta testing a new app down here, since we're running into all kind. I hate to say it, it's a shame, but it's almost on a daily basis down here, Andre, that something is going on with these so-called drones, whether somebody's flying here doing this illegal or whatever, that it's unreal. I mean, literally on a daily basis. And I just caught rumor here, I think this morning, that they apprehended or caught somebody else down at our White House trying to fly a drone again. So I didn't get the full story on that, but so anyway, the FAA is coming out and they're beta testing a new app called Before You Fly, and I think it has a lot of good features, or it could be very useful to people trying to get into this, buying a DJI Phantom or a Blade 350 or something that doesn't have a lot of knowledge, and I think they're going to test it out throughout the summer, so we're probably not going to be able to get our hands on it real soon. But a couple things that they state of the features, one of them was it has a status indicator that informs the operator about their current plan location. So in other words, if say you go somewhere, you pull up the app, runs off the GPS, and it'll tell you, you're not within 5 miles of an airport, there's no restrictions at this space, you're good to 400 feet or whatever. So in a way, I think for people not really involved in the RC or know a lot about it, it can be a big benefit. It has a planner mode, you can go in there and plan, where you're going to fly exactly, what altitudes and everything, and it will supposed to let you know if that's okay or if it's safe. It's supposed to have some interactive maps on it. I'm not exactly sure. They haven't come out with a lot of information, a lot of detail on it yet. I'm supposed to have the contact information for surrounding airports in your area, and also links to any kind of FAA resources and regulatory information if you're not real sure. So I think down the road, once they get this thing going and get the little kinks and everything worked out, I think it could be a really good app for people out there. What do you think?
Okay. The question to my mind is, it is a good idea. I just wonder how much data is going back to, are you logging in as a user, or is this just, a one way where I'm just downloading the information, or is data going back and so they can, kind of follow you around? But yeah, if there's knowledge doesn't hurt, advising people of what's, and it's probably better than saying no, mandating other things, saying you must do this, you must that. So, it's like, look, we're informing, we're making it easier for you to know if you're in the right spot or not. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've talked to a few people about it. They seem to be, and I'm the same way. I'm kind of on the fence, have mixed emotions about it, but, I'm trying to look at a different perspective, to where if you're getting in and you'd like to do the AP stuff and like to kind of travel around and do different, stuff in different areas, I think this app could help you. You get to your spot, you fire up the app and go, oh man, there's an airport like a mile away. I didn't know that, I got to do this or stay under here. You know what I mean? So
yes,
I think it could be beneficial, instead of where the guy just pulls it out, looks around, nothing around, like, hey, I'm good, and is up cranking around, cruising around, shooting video when an airplane goes by or something, and then next thing we know, they're on the news.
Yeah. So. Well, yeah, another, it's added to your checklist, to your pre-flight checklist, talk, and just, it's just another method of informing. And, if that saves some lives and or just prevents stuff from happening, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. So. But that's about all I have. If there's anything else you wanted to talk about, Andre, feel free. Well, and if not, we'll get into some crash stories. But go ahead.
Well, it's just that APM. You had forwarded me that email from Derek down in South Africa. That was a pretty neat conversation. So he's trying to help I think it's a sheep. Yeah, it's a sheep farm.
Yep,
and he's got this 2-kilometer, area. So he wants to build an APM, a quad or airplane. He hasn't quite decided, that just takes off and goes around and plays a little speaker music. And, I'm like, oh, that would be so neat to have a wide open field of that envelope to test something like that. So anyway, we went back and forth, and he's gonna look at some APM stuff, so that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of got me, I was reading through you guys going back and forth, initially I thought when I first read it that they were just wanted a APM style and set the waypoints and everything, but after looking through your email, they are actually trying to set up something that was completely autonomous. Like, it has it set up on a time and date and everything, to where you leave the battery plugged in and at 2 o'clock in the morning, this thing takes off, flies its route, scares the foxes away, then turns around, comes back, lands and shuts off. And I was like, oh boy, I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's something out there and they could, if they really dug deep, but man, they're really, I think, kind of pushing it a little bit for that.
Yeah, it's the landing and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like those little autonomous vacuums, it's got to come back to its port to recharge.
Right. But I definitely think it's possible,
Yeah. It almost sounds like a flight test challenge.
Yeah, you're right.
Some kind of pad, then I don't know how you would do the recharging and all it, but just to have I've got farmland, but the problem with farmlands, and we lost the guys out here lost 2 quads last year, and they were never found because they go into the field and they sit there for a couple of days and eventually they probably get run over by equipment or something. So but to have an open space, so. We'll see. So anyway, he hasn't come back with any correspondence, but I said, maybe a plane or a quad or something, and you can set up the flashing lights and the noisemakers and all this stuff. But
I was kind of interested I was looking at his little map and everything. It looked like it was quite the distance, so I was kind of wondering if a quadcopter, you know, battery-wise, if it was, you know, like you said, it might be better to have, like, a small little wing or something like that, I think might work better.
Yeah, it's a 4 kilometer round trip, and that's just from one end to one end, so you do the whole thing, and But I've seen some wings, so guys build wings up and, you know, running, you know, 2 4S's or whatever. They're airborne for like 40 minutes.
Oh,
like,
easily, yeah.
Like, no, I really should pull the APM out of the S500, which I haven't even flown yet, and start building a wing. I'm like, no, yeah, stay on focus. Yeah. That's almost ready to go, too.
Good, I'm telling you, Andre, I guarantee it. When you get that APM thing going and you're out and you're tinkering around and you're playing with it, your focus, I think, is going to shift a little bit, because that's kind of what happened to me. You know, I got this AP platform, and I just – right now that's my thing. You know, you venture from this to this to this to this, and now I'm onto this AP stuff of just cruising around and shooting video and tinkering around, and I'm telling you right now, you are going to love it.
Well, I'm looking forward. I think it's ready to go. I don't want to try taking off here in the yard, because I don't think there's enough room. So I'm going to take it out to the field and go into the auto tuning and just see how it levels out and everything. So I've got a little bit more balancing. I may take the gimbal off for the initial test, but I think the weight should be on the craft so it can sort itself out. But
yeah, I agree.
I programmed up the remote the other night, and it was talking away over the tablet.
No kidding. So.
Oh, yeah, it's, you know, so I'm going between the modes, the loiter mode. I had to do a little research to figure out the buttons and switches and all that, but I figured that out. So I've got the three modes on my three-way, and then I've got the return to land override on my aileron switch.
Oh, okay.
So it all talks, and, you know, it's kind of a little reverse engineering on it, you know, to make all the switches go in the direction they want, but it's almost there. So. Yeah. A little bit more tidying up on the wire, and then I should be able to throw some props on this thing and just see what it does.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, what's your, like, main focus or purpose? Is it just something you always wanted to do, or do you really have a purpose for this
thing? Well, the aerial photography. Uh-huh. So, you know, we'll see what it does as far as videography and everything. Right now, I'm just running my old GoPro on it. But for me, it was to see what it could do, and just that whole interaction with the tablet and that kind of technology. And, right, you know. We'll see. I mean, the waypointing, it's funny. I mean, if it was ever a perspective, I can see this technology being huge in agriculture. Uh-huh. I mean, we fly near basically, I got the school where we are, and then the rest of the land around there is all agriculture. Imagine being able to fly over top of the fields and just scan, saying, you know, you've got to, you need to redirect some pesticides or watering or efforts to this spot over here, and here's a GPS coordinate. I could just imagine, you know, that application alone could probably, you know, be, you know, fly. You just set these things up on their waypoints, and you just sit there and let it scan and then come back, and then you analyze the data.
Right.
Just that alone. Who cares about the real estate stuff, you know?
I agree with you. And I'll tell you what, the Blade 350 that I have right now, you know, that's the first really quad that I've owned personally, you know, to have the GPS lock stuff on it, and it is amazing, and I have some footage and photos, and I just haven't had time to really go through it. I want to post some more stuff on Instagram, but when we were out flying the other night, Mikey had his little H quad, beautiful little H quad he built, you know, from the flight test stuff, and I went up maybe 250 feet, and just sat it there. And there was Mike just cranking around me, you know, while I was sitting there, and I was spinning around, following him around, and we got some really good shots of him just cruising around up there. And that thing just, I mean, locked dead, beautiful video and photos coming off of that thing. And there was a couple he got pretty close to me. And it was crazy to watch, you know, my quad was completely locked and not moving at all, and he was flying around me. How much, you know, actual variance there was from him trying to, you know, I was looking at him, he was looking at me kind of deal. Just amazing, though, what you can get with that stuff.
it'll be interesting, you know, and you know, it's just another aspect, another avenue of flight. I mean, we've got a little 250s, and that's just, you know, that's like your little rocket ship.
Right.
And then I still have my tricopter, and I love flying my tricopter because it's very swishy. You know, I think was the word the Swede used, right? David would call him swishy because he wanted that flow and the momentum, and it's very much like flying an airplane almost. I'm excited to see this thing go. I've got the gimbal so I can I've got the gimbal set up so I can pan directly down. So, you know, I don't think I see the landing gear or anything, and it's just, you know, you look down and you'll be able to get some really awesome shots, and that's all programmed in through it. So I could actually go as far as mapping coordinates on the tablet and say, okay, pan the camera down here, and it will take over and pan it down. So,
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Now,
wow.
I'm almost thinking that I'm out of channels on my radio.
Oh, jeez.
So I'm like, ah, it's too bad because I could, you know, I could command or put a video switch. So I go from the, you know, the flight camera to the GoPro, so I could see the two different feeds.
Oh,
or maybe
okay.
I just put a second video transmitter on the darn thing, you know, and have two channels. So I don't know. Lots of options.
You know, you make me laugh because, you know, I've been using the DX9 a lot here lately, and I'm telling you, I don't know how I kind of survived before talking radios because, you know, especially for us, we fly a lot of different things, and a lot of times, you know, like, just say, like, the Vision Air or the Sukhoi, for instance, they have so many different modes, you know, and each mode has a high rate, low rate, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of times you get out to field and you're like, okay, what switch was this on? And you got to look at the radio. What switch was? The second you flip them switches on the DX9, you're like, high rates. Oh, precision mode, 3D. I mean, it's so nice that, you know, to have that feature.
I can tell a story, and it's exactly what you just mentioned. So I last weekend, it was the first time in many, many, many weeks I flew the Sukhoi, and I did the exact same thing. I took off, and I did all my pre-checks and didn't really think about it. I took off in stability mode, high rates.
Oh,
and
that's not good.
It was so you take off, no big deal.
Yeah, right.
And I let, you know, I no input on the stick because she's climbing. Yeah. All of a sudden, the plane straightened out, and I'm like, whoa! And I wiggled the sticks and high rates on the ailerons, and I almost rolled it like 10 feet off the deck. I'm like, ah! And it was exactly that. I'm like, I want a radio.
Yes.
And exactly as you just said. So after the podcast this afternoon, I have to go, and I'm picking up a Taranis.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice. I'm telling you, that's a great feature of talking radio.
Well, and this is exactly it. I didn't care, the guy I bought the F-190 from said, oh, I happen to have a second one. Long story, nothing wrong with the radio. He just happened to have two somehow.
Huh.
And I went, you're my drug dealer this week, man. Stop it. Anyhow, Laura laughed. And because I was going to just simply buy a I mean, I would love a DX and everything, but I think I flipped you how much they cost Canadian. It's just, you know, it's obscene. This thing, I'm getting this radio for what it would cost. For less than what it would cost for me to bring in like a 9XR Pro after shipping and battery and so on. So, but it's got exactly what I'm looking for. Memory and voice.
Yeah.
Basically my two criteria. And obviously now I'll be able to run the FR Sky and get all the telemetry stuff off the receivers.
Oh, nice.
But for now I can run all my Turnigy 9X receiver transmitter pack will work with that one. Uh-huh. And also all my Spectrum, the Orange Spectrum and the Orange Long Range stuff. So.
Oh, nice.
Because on both of my 9Xs, they're starting to run out of memory. And
right.
They're good for what, 10, 11 planes, but I'm running.
That's it?
Well, yeah, and plus I'm running the ER9X firmware swap, right?
Uh-huh.
And as you start adding features to the planes, it takes up more memory. So I was configuring my AP quad, and all of a sudden one of my radios started chiming at me, going, "I'm running out of memory." I'm like, "I'll delete a couple old models and all this stuff." But now I'm going to be able to put everything into one radio, and because I've been going to the field with two radios lately.
Yeah.
I've got my one standard for the 9Xs, so that's all the other airplanes, and then one with the orange, so I can run the Spectrum. But I'm going to be switching modules, obviously.
Right.
but that's just the way I'm built up. And eventually, you know what that means. I'm going to start buying like, $15, $20 receivers.
Right. Oh, yeah. I do the same thing. You know, that was kind of one of the bad things I didn't like about the my DX8. When that radio came out, it only had a, I'm trying to remember, a 30-plane or whatever, 30-model memory in it. It does have the SD card, but I kind of, in a way, it was a little pain in the butt where you had to, take one out, put it on the SD card, put the new one in, and vice versa, so it'd have, 10 or 15, maybe test planes on the SD card and then my regular planes, and then I had to shuffle them around. Where now, at least with the DX9, a 250 model memory, internal memory.
Oh, nice.
So yeah. I don't think I'm going to fill that one up. And if I do, I got a serious problem.
Yeah. So. And it was, all these purchases, none of this stuff was supposed to happen. It's just, they just happened. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this, what was my last email to you? Does it ever end?
No, I just, every time you tell me, okay, I'm done, I laugh. I know how you are, I know how I am and everything. I just laugh because I've said it a million times. Okay, this is it. I'm done till fall, or I'm done till winter, or it never ends, Andre. I'm telling you right now, don't even say it anymore because it will never end.
As I said to my wife, and she's like, here, I'm like, hey, it's content for the podcast, we have to keep testing. Yes, that's it. We have to keep the podcast.
That's what I keep telling myself too. So,
all right. We should do some flight crash.
All right. Hey, let's get into it, man. I hope I can remember where we left off. I mean, my inbox right now, I have to thank the listeners again. My inbox is stuffed. I mean, full of crash stories. So again, don't freak out if you haven't heard your story lately. It's going to take us a little while to get through some of these. And again, we may just have to come in here on a Saturday or something. It's up to you guys too. We can put out the regular FT After Hours podcast, but maybe a Saturday we can all jump in here sometime and just do a crash story, and we'll throw it out as an extra or something to try to catch up a little bit. But anyway, here we go. Let's see. First one's from Jeremiah Thompson, and I got to laugh at his, and when he starts it off, he says, "Dear Chris, Mike, Wayne, and sometimes Andre." let's see. "My name is Jeremy, and I've been flying RC on and off for about 14 years. I do not live too far from you guys in North Ridgeville," which that's not too far. That's probably about 45 minutes from here, Andre. "It's about 10 miles west of Cleveland Airport. While I've flown for quite some time, my crash stories have been limited to the usual. I tried something stupid, or flying in heavy winds, low inverted passes, flying in the sun without sunglasses, the normal stuff. But this time I think I hit crash gold. Last week, my family and I went to an opening weekend of a local drive-in movie theater." There's something you don't see a whole lot of anymore.
Nice.
"Before we left, I thought it would be a great idea to grab my newly rebuilt Electro-Hub tricopter that I customized. I figured I would go to the far corner of the lot, take her out, and capture some cool pictures of the drive-in at dusk." That's kind of a neat idea. "So once we arrived, I pulled out my tricopter and GoPro and had my son Max grab my radio. We walked all the way up to the far corner of the lot near the exit. We were probably a good 200 yards away from people and vehicles. I thought it would be a great idea to connect the GoPro to my cell phone app so I could frame the shots. I tried aiming my tricopter and nothing was happening. I troubleshot this for a few minutes when it dawned on me that the Wi-Fi signal to and from the GoPro was probably interfering with the transmitter as they both run on 2.4. I then shut off the Wi-Fi on my phone and tried to arm the tricopter again. It worked. I disarmed the tricopter, set up the GoPro to take a picture every 2 seconds. Once everything was good, I rearmed it and gave it a little throttle. The tricopter took off, climbed straight up quickly. I thought it was moving kind of fast and getting a little high, so I backed off the throttle a little. Nothing happened. It kept climbing. I backed off more until the throttle was all the way down. Still nothing. The tricopter was still climbing. Oh my gosh. In a panic, I started flipping. Why do we do this? You get in a panic and you're just doing anything you can to get this thing to stop or come back. He says, I backed off the throttle until it was all the way down. Still nothing. The tricopter was still climbing. In a panic, I started flipping all the switches. Luckily, I had set up the altitude hold on my multi-Wii board, and that did the trick. The tricopter immediately stopped climbing and stopped at about 100 feet. If I didn't have altitude hold set up, it probably would have climbed until the battery died. There was still the problem of how do I get it down? Could you imagine? You're sitting here, probably sweating and shaking with this thing in altitude hold going, what do I do? What do I do? You know? Ah, oh, that's crazy. It took a few minutes to think about it while I was flying it back and forth. I thought I could just wait till the battery ran out and it would just come crashing to the ground. Oh, that wouldn't be good. That was not what I wanted to be doing, that I just put a lot of time in making it how I wanted, and with a GoPro on the front, I'm not sure it would survive. While I was flying it around, I noticed that when I made aggressive turns, it would lose altitude a little. The problem with landing it was that the turns had to be extremely aggressive to lose more than a couple feet and put the tricopter at great risk of disintegrating on impact. Behind me was the Ohio Turnpike. Oh, I know exactly where this drive-in movie theater is now that he's talking about. Behind me was the Ohio Turnpike and a very steep hill that was about 50 feet or so high. It had tall grass all the way from the top to the bottom. I thought if I put it down in the grass, it might minimize the damage. So I started my death spiral towards terra firma. It took me a good 2 minutes to actually get it low enough. Every time I had to level out, it would try to reposition. It started to climb back up to the altitude when I flipped the switch. I brought it toward me, toward the hill, and boom, it hit the ground with the blade still turning after impact. I climbed up the hill with my heart pounding, hoping the damage was minimal. I arrived at the copter, unplugged the battery to shut the motors off. I assessed the damage to find that I had only broken one landing gear and one nylon standoff, both of which I can fix for free. Turns out I had landed at the same angle as the hill, so it was like landing on a regular runway. The lesson of the story is that even if you turn off your phone's Wi-Fi, it would be in your best interest to also turn the Wi-Fi off of the GoPro.
On the camera.
Also, it is another good reason to make sure you fly away from people and property. P.S. I was unable to attach some photos that I took right now, but I will send them in a separate email. And I think he actually did send me some photos, Andre, of it.
Yeah.
And what's funny is... the one photo off the GoPro is actually showing it in the death spiral, and it's kind of funny looking. But, man, that's the
fact that the GoPro Wi-Fi is overpowering his receiver is... That's odd. That is really, really odd. I'd almost want to test that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it would do that.
I the Wi-Fi isn't that powerful, and... You know, yeah, you can get glitches and stuff, but so he had no elevator control. It almost sounds like it would be really awesome to talk to him and find out if it is actually the camera, and if he moved the camera back and forth, would it change something? Because he had all his other controls but his throttle, so it's almost like it locked into an auto power mode and an altitude lock. So he says, I'm locked to go to 100 feet. I'm going to go to 100 feet. So it'd be really interesting to find out if it was a multi-Wii a programming issue or if it was the camera.
Yeah, I agree with you there. It does sound. I would think that if the GoPro had affected it, it would have affected more than just the throttle.
Yeah,
you know?
He wouldn't have had his aileron stick working.
Yeah,
I can relate to crashing. You know, your brand new tricopter. The very first time I put mine up, I don't even know if the video is posted, but I didn't set the GoPro as the KK board at all. I just put her up in the air. And all of a sudden, this thing is acting. It's all twitchy in the air, and I'm, and the road is nearby, and I'm losing control of this thing. So, yeah, I dropped the power and tried to glide it in and shattered a $20, $25 brand-new metal, all-metal geared servo, you know. The very first tricopter flight, you know, the frame is all destroyed and all this. But, yeah, that... Gee, and with people in a highway nearby, yep, the heart rate.
Oh,
everything.
Yeah, absolutely going, you know, initial to where, hey, could you imagine you're looking at your radio and your throttle is all the way down, this thing's still going. he was smart about it and didn't panic, and I guess, you know, flipping the switches and trying, I'm sure he probably might have had return to home and everything else, you know, that, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, all right, good for him to get it down.
Yeah. Okay, this one's from Alistair Price, and we've heard from this gentleman before. He's usually has some good ones, and he's from Melbourne, Australia.
Oh.
Hey, guys, I got another crash story here. The other day I was flying my Bloody Wonder at my local sports ground, where I often fly. However, I'm relatively new to the hobby. I've never flown at this time of the year before. So I did the standard vertical takeoff, but as soon as my plane was in the air, four magpies launched themselves from the trees behind me and began to chase my plane. Obviously, the bloody Wonder was way more maneuverable than the bird, so I let them chase me for a minute or so before I used my common sense to realize that the 8-inch blade of death could actually be a whirling blade of death if it came into contact with the birds. So I immediately came off the throttle in an effort to glide the plane back, but the birds very quickly caught up and began to attack my wing. The bird somehow managed to rip both the servo horns off the servos, leaving me with nothing to do except watch the plane dive from about 50 meters up, straight into the metal fence next to me. Amazingly, the plane still flies, but needs a new motor, servo, power pod, and significant surgery on a broken wing and a nose. Keep up the good work, Alistair. That's crazy how many stories I get of birds attacking planes, and I've never, never had that happen to me, or even like nothing, you know?
We had a close call this last week, and the field, one of the gentlemen, well, the gentleman that took pictures of the 190 when it was the air came out with a Hobby King B-17.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just cruising around. It's a beautiful plane. It is, you think the Sky Mule has a terrifying roll rate? This thing is, he rolled it. And I'm like, is it ever going to come upright? Anyhow, he's flying along, and all of a sudden, the seagull out of nowhere is like within inches of it. It's like the seagull just wasn't paying attention, you know, la, 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 and whoa! And they both darted each other, but if they had hit, it would have been messy.
Wow. I mean, we have numerous birds that usually come out and fly with us, you know, if we got the radians and stuff up.
Yeah.
I've never, you know, we've had a few hawks even come out, and I thought for sure sometime, you know, over the last few years, we might add a hawk or something, attack it. But no, I'm really shocked they've never had any problems.
We have a lot of geese in our area, especially during migration.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They kind of look at it and go, eh,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
I don't think we would catch them. And I've got a feeling if you mess with a flock of geese, your plane is not coming back.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Okay, ready for another one?
Bring it on.
This one's from Jim O'Halloran. This is funny, and I think we talked about this texting back and forth or something. This one's good. See if you remember it. Hi, FT After Hours crew. I've been interested in RC flying since I was a teenager, but I've always dismissed it as being too expensive. A couple years ago, I was fortunate enough to spend several months working on a local RC hobby shop's, or I'm sorry, let me get this going. RC hobby shop's website at work. One day, the Blade Nano QX appeared in their coming soon category, the tiny quad ready to fly for under $100, Australian. I was sold. I ordered one and a spare battery as soon as it came in stock. After learning to control the Nano QX in my dining room, I started to feel like I needed more space to really start cranking this thing around. There's a local group of pilots that flies in an indoor netball stadium once a month. So myself, a friend who's just getting reacquainted with helis again after a few years out of the hobby, decided to check it out. After two or three visits to the netball stadium, I was really starting to feel comfortable with the QX, and you know where this is going to get in trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
After watching my friend fly through between the roof beams and the roof of the netball stadium with his Blade CX2, which is a coaxial heli, I decided to give it a go. I slowly climbed up towards the roof, probably 40 or 50 feet up and almost directly above my head, then edged forward. After a couple attempts where I was a bit low, I flew between the beams and the roof and was pretty pleased with myself. That's where the real trouble began. He's getting a little cocky now, isn't he? Coming out the other side without getting stuck, I eased off the throttle and started to descend. As I came down, the Nano QX passed directly between me and one of the massive spotlights hanging from the roof, and I lost sight of it. After panicking for a moment, I decided the best thing I could do was just keep descending slowly like I had been and try to regain sight of it on the other side of the light. I didn't. After a few moments, I hadn't seen it reappear, and I really started to get worried. I decided that a quad on the ground will do less damage than one I can't see in the air somewhere, so it is so small and light that I could just chop the throttle, dump it on the ground, probably not break anything. I figured I'd hear it hit the ground, or else a little black quad should be easily to see on a polished timber floor, right? I didn't hear it, and I didn't see it. Buzzing the throttle a little, I still can't hear it or see it. I started walking the court in front of me where I was standing and couldn't see it. A couple of other pilots joined the search, and we started searching the adjoining court, the grandstands, etc. Every so often, I'd buzz the throttle hoping to hear my quad. After doing the walk of shame for 10 to 15 minutes, I was beginning to think my little quad had joined a couple of other planes wedged in the structure of the stadium and lost forever. Oh, that would stink. Just as we were about to declare it a loss, a spectator from the court behind where I was standing appeared with my QX in hand and asked that if this is what we were looking for. While I'd lost sight of the quad, it had passed directly overhead over some seating behind where I was standing it into another netball court, far enough behind me that I didn't hear it land or the sound of the motors. Having recovered my Nano QX undamaged, I decided that I pushed my luck far enough, packed up my stuff, and left. I still fly at the netball stadium, but I haven't been brave enough to take on the roof since. Love the podcast, especially the crash stories, Jim. Oh, he says, P.S., I'm not sure how popular netball is in the U.S., but it's a played court which is around the same size as a basketball court. The stadium we fly in is a large indoor area containing three courts and some grandstand seating, so it's a great place with no wind. Huh, interesting.
Hey, sensible guy.
Yeah, he's one guy that go, said, what,
let's
yeah.
Let's do that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never flown indoors.
All right, got another one here. This one's pretty long, but I think it's pretty good. This one's by Jason Ketchler. It's called The Rebirth and Death of a DJI FC-40. Telling you my crash story might provide some catharsis as I begin to the rebuild process. 3 weeks ago, I had a hard landing on my FC-40. I stayed up too long and was coming down on a dead battery. It hit hard enough to break the landing gear and break the body shell where the landing gear mounts. Long story, I got new, longer legs, new shell, added a 2D gimbal while I was at it. It took my time rebuilding and double-checking everything I could. I had been flying this FC-40 for a few months now, and I felt pretty confident in myself for low-altitude, line-of-sight flying. This morning, I took it out for its first test flight in the new body with the gimbal working, the FC-40 cam, not a GoPro. I did the compass stance, lifted off. I had it hovering about head height when it suddenly took off south. Oh my gosh. It began climbing and was banking south really hard. I'd immediately flipped the switch to Addy mode and yanked the sticks back in my direction, roughly northeast. This kept it from flying away, but it now became back toward me, flip up on its side at 90 degrees, pulling full power. Oh, man. It hit the side of my house like a missile, missing my bedroom window by about a foot. Suffice to say, this FC-40 will not fly again. The body is a total wreck. All four props are damaged, and I am shell-shocked. The violence of the crash was impressive and loud. A review of events in my head indicates that I may have made a mistake in my compass calibration. I am not positive of the second stage of slow blinking green LEDs before I set it on the ground or liftoff. If that is true, then the compass would have been all screwed up and my first little bump of sideways stick input sent it off to Timbuktu. Now, I must begin to save up money to build a new one. I plan to reuse the motors and maybe the speed controls from the FC-40, get an Eagle Tree Vector FCU and a Turnigy 9X radio to begin my rebuild. I need to pick up a frame, but I have a lot of slowly acquiring parts to do first. Do you guys think it is safe to reuse those motors after something like this? What about the ESCs? Finally, can those motors swing a 10-inch prop or maybe a 12? I'm thinking to get a larger frame for the next version. Well, motor-wise, as long as, they're spinning freely, you don't hear anything, the ESCs, if they, they didn't burn up, my thing would be, obviously take the props off or whatever, put them on a tester, hook them actually up to the ESC and the motor and run them and see what they do. If there's no noise or smoke or anything like that, I would think they'd be okay.
Yeah, I run some pretty old motors that are, all they're going to do is affect your, you know, if they are a little worn or if even the bearings are a little beat up or the shafts, all they're going to do is affect your video stability a little bit or reduce your flight times. But if you just want to get the thing up around and you know, have a dirty quad.
Yeah. And well, you know, too, Andre, with the prop off and everything hooked up and that thing's spinning, if everything's good, the motors are pretty quiet. Like, if you have a bearing or something going out, they're pretty noisy, and you can tell right away. Or if your shaft is bent or something like that, they usually make a lot of noise or have a lot of vibration in them. So,
yeah, and you can balance the using some tape. You can balance the bell on the motor if it's off. You might even be able to, if the shafts are bent, depending on the motor. I'd have to look up the. I'm just looking at pictures of the model. You can change out the shafts and stuff like that depending on the model and the motors and everything. Sorry. ESCs, yeah, unless they've smoked, they should be fine. But again, test them all. And even if you, you know, put the frame down with one prop, you know, do all your safety stuff, run it up, and just make sure it still handles a load of full throttle.
Yeah,
you should be okay. You know, if there's a problem there, the ESC will either, well, it'll either smoke or it'll shut itself down if it does detect a heat load or something, depending on the programming and the function. But obviously, it's a DJI product, so that, you know, they've probably got some pretty good fail safes into it.
Right.
It's just too bad that the compass didn't go. I can relate to that, too, all the compass frustrations with my testing on my board. But to have something fly away like that and then violently go in, I almost wonder if it was a stick direction thing as well.
You know, that makes me think, Andre, and I don't have a lot of experience with this, you know, kind of stuff, but on the Blade 350, they recommend, obviously, if you go to a different location to recalibrate the compass, and I've been using the little compass on the iPhone, and one time, and it was by mistake, and I was kind of in a hurry because I had to recalibrate it and was a little annoyed. The compass on my phone wasn't calibrated. You know, you can do a little calibration with that.
Yeah, you gotta spin it around. Yeah.
So I came up and was looking at north, and I was like, in my head going, I don't think that's north. It might be close, but I think we're off. And stupid me, not really double checking, I calibrated the compass off of that direction on the blade. And it flew it. And I didn't notice anything. I didn't see where it was doing anything unusual. I didn't detect anything. Now, I went back there again later on and flew and calibrated the compass on my phone and realized I was probably off, I don't know, 20, 30 degrees. So I don't know. I didn't have any problems and didn't notice. So I don't know what would happen if you really, you know, are really off on your compass calibration. That's something I probably ought to check into.
Yeah, the APM, it goes, it starts screaming at you pretty good. Actually, the APM won't let you arm unless it's satisfied, so that's kind of nice.
Oh. Huh,
you can override it, but like it comes up. When I was having, because I had to cut between the internal compass and the external compass, which sits on the GPS unit, I was having some trace issues where I couldn't get rid of the trace. So all of a sudden, the thing had no compass at all. And, you know, from that point on, it wouldn't arm, it wouldn't talk. But then I cleaned up all my soldering and everything, and it worked. But for a while, it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't arm, it wouldn't do anything. It wouldn't accept commands going, sorry, I don't know what's going on. There's an error, you know. So.
Uh-huh. Huh,
so it's, there are some safety behind it, but I think in your case, it depends on how it uses the home location. I think it uses a GPS to do the home.
Yes, it does.
So in your case, the compass might have been off, but it would have been able to get back. Whether, you know, your data might not have been, you know, if you're looking at on your app and everything, it's going to give you some false readings, I guess.
Yeah, that could be. But I didn't have no issues with the quad, you know.
No.
Nothing like that. So that might be something that I'll have to look into and maybe do some testing on, because I really don't know much about that. All right, let's do one more. And then, man, I can't believe we've been in here over an hour already. We'll do one more, and then we'll get out of here, Andre. How's that?
Excellent.
Okay. This one's by one of our favorite people that we get a lot of stories from. This is from Hunter again down in New Zealand.
I know this story.
You know this story?
He emailed me.
Yeah. So we love you, Hunter. Keep sending them in, because you've got more crash stories than anybody I know, I think. I don't know if it's good or it's bad. It's good for us, maybe bad for you. I don't know. Okay, here we go. Hey, Chris, it's Hunter here again, and yet with another crash story. This one was about a year ago, and I had my old Super Cub LP, and I had just recently gotten my new electronics so I could use my DX6i to fly it. I was also borrowing my uncle's UMX ASK-21 glider that has AS3X in it. I also had my dad with me at the time. The plan was to tow the ASK-21 up with my dad while flying it, while I was flying the tow plane with my Super Cub. So, after an uneventful takeoff, I flew downwind stretch, which took my Cub and the glider over our backyard that is filled with tractors and agricultural machinery, as my dad is a contractor. We were both at a pretty decent height, but I didn't want Dad to release it yet because he would be trying to fly upwind with a glider, and two, he was over the yard and a tall hedge separates our line of sight between us and the aircraft, but we could still see them because they were high enough in the air. Of course, he decides it's a good time to release, and almost immediately after releasing the glider, it stalls against the headwind and gets sucked into a downdraft from the tall hedge, then loses a visual because it went behind the hedge. Less than a half a second later, we hear the familiar crunch of foam, which really isn't good because this glider has a wingspan of maybe 30 inches. So I came in, landed, started to walk back towards the house, while my dad goes and retrieves a glider that is snapped in three different places on the fuselage and tore the wing completely on the right side. So after quite a bit of carbon rod, epoxy, foam-safe CAA was applied to the chunks of the glider, it became flyable again. It flew many more flights before a rail on one of the tiny linear servos built in the AS3X board had come apart, and the only way to fix it is pull the board out, unscrew the servo, which I can't do because the board is epoxied into the fuselage. Also, I don't be mean to complain, but my last name is said Benbo. I take it. Like bow and arrow. Hopefully you get my drift. And it's Chris Church. You guys might recognize the name from the 7.1 magnitude earthquake that we had in September of 2010. The fault line for the earthquake is 2 kilometers south of where I live, or 1.2 miles. Wow. And there also is a 5 and 6 magnitude earthquakes that struck the northeast of Christchurch, pretty much obliterating our CBD and killing 185 people in February of 2011. Wow, I didn't realize that. Anyway, hope you enjoy another one of my stories. Love hearing your reactions on the podcast. Someday you might have to give me a call. You know what, Hunter? Maybe we will.
I think we should.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to him.
He has a doozy. He Facebooked me some of it. He's got one that you're going to want to talk to him about. I don't know the results yet, but it's a little. You'll I don't want to ruin it because I want him to have his moment, but yeah, it's a recent one. It's more recent than the one he's just obviously this one that he just got from last year, but there's another one where we've been talking on Facebook, so I'm like, "Okay."
I may even have it. Like I said, my inbox, there's quite a few crash stories I haven't actually. I'm glancing through here right now. He may have already sent it. I just haven't seen it.
You might have to set up another email address just for crash stories.
Yeah, it's I love them. I don't want them to stop. But I said, one of these days we might just have to come in here and sit down. And again, I love, if we get a really good story, now that I got the board set up now, I can keep you on Skype, and then I can also call some other people. So that will work out good. But, we get a good story. I love to call these guys or these people and get their side of it and feelings and, I think that's kind of exciting to hear. So, all right, Andre, we've been rattling on an hour and a half, and I still have to get this thing edited. I have to get it out and get it up, and then do baseball, and then go to a wedding. So I'm kind
of
busy today.
It's a busy weekend. Yeah, same here. I got a lot of house and spring cleaning stuff, and I might try and go flying later on today.
Good.
What do we got? We got Flight Fest. So the boys put out an update. So they 600 odd pilots.
Ah, so we're maxed out already, or no?
I don't think we're maxed out, but it's
it's
pretty well on par with last year. Uh-huh. So that is fantastic. Yep. It is going to be why do I predict I'm going to come back to work like the following week and just be completely wiped out?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal time, but like you said, now I think we're up to, is it 3 or 4 days? Are they going through Sunday, or I can't remember. I know it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday for sure, maybe even part of Sunday now. But just go on the website, flightfest.com. They have all the information on there. Again, it sounds like it's filling up quick. If you think you're going to come, I would at least sign up and register. And I've been telling a lot of people, too. They kind of know what I do, you know, with flight tests, and they come out and hang out or ask a lot of questions. I've been telling a lot of people too, if you're not comfortable flying, or you don't, you know, this isn't something, you know, you're really into, but the overall event is amazing. Like, if you just want to come out and be a spectator, that's great
by
too.
All means.
Yeah, come on out, because you see anything and everything. The people are great. You meet a lot of great people from all over the country, all over the world, actually. It's just a great event. Come out, you know, get some food, hang out, see the different aspects of flying, and may even get an FPV ride, which I think a lot of people would enjoy. It's just going to be a good time. So, once again, flightfest.com. Get on there. All the information is on there. Check it out. The other thing I want to mention too, Austin's been bugging me. The videos are up on iTunes. Just go to the video podcast section, I believe, and a lot of the flight test videos are on there, so you can get on there and watch them, which is a really cool idea. I think you guys maybe that aren't real familiar with flight test or anything, get on there and watch the videos. That's a cool idea I think he came up with. So yep. Other than that, keep sending in the crash stories. I promise you we will get to them. Follow us on Instagram at FT After Hours. Any information or anything, send me an email at chris@flighttest.com. We're also on Twitter at FT After Hours. I think we're going to get out of here, Andre.
Excellent. Everybody have a great flying weekend, eh?
Yes, get out there, fly something, crash something so we can hear about it. We'll definitely be back soon. Hopefully, we can get all the guys in here. We got a fantastic crash story that I want to talk about. And we have some review stuff with the Whippet and the Vision Air coming up. So we have a lot of stuff coming up. It's just we got to get through this baseball thing. Yeah, get through this baseball thing, get everybody back on schedule, and we'll have a lot of fun. So thanks again to all our listeners. We really appreciate it. Without you guys, I wouldn't even be sitting here rattling away. So thanks again. Thank you, Andre, for got you up early and in here for the podcast. So I appreciate that. I actually had a really good time. I was a little nervous. I've been behind the eight ball, and I haven't, you know, been really plugged into what's been going on and everything. But we had some good conversation, I feel, and I had a good time this morning. So thank you.
No problem, man.
All right. Thanks again, everyone. We will see you soon. We're out of here.